www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Over the years, you've brought them into your home. You were prescribed opioids after the C-section, when Dad injured his back, when your basketball star tore his ACL. Opioids helped with the pain, and you held on to them, just in case. But did you know holding on to unused opioids puts your family at risk? Opioids are powerful, pain-reducing prescription medicines. But most people who are prescribed opioids don't finish their prescriptions. So millions of unused opioids are sitting in homes across the country. And tragically, more than 100 Americans die every day from overdoses involving opioids. What can you do to protect your family? Remove the risk of unused opioids from your home. Pills, patches, or syrups in drawers, purses, and cabinets. Anywhere they might be hiding. To find out how to dispose of them properly, visit www.fda.gov/drug disposal.
This is Law and Disorder.
Today on Law and Disorder, we speak with historian Paul LeBlanc on the tremendous socialist victory of Zoran Mandani in the race for mayor in New York City.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From Belém, Brazil, the gateway to the Amazon, we're at COP30, the UN Climate Summit. This is Democracy Now!
One of the most important things for me for this COP is the action and the solidarity that we are building together as an indigenous leaders and land defenders for different parts of the world. Because we know that the answer is us. We know that we are the lead alternatives. We have the answers and we have the response for all the devastation and the destruction for the climate crisis.
Tens of thousands of people marched in Belém, Brazil, Saturday in an indigenous-led protest calling for leaders at the UN Climate Summit to take action to combat the climate crisis and protect the Amazon. We'll air a report from the streets of Belém, then speak to the heads of Amazon Watch and Oxfam Brazil.
The world needs to understand that Amazon is not only a word, it's a real space that are right now facing consequence.
All that and more coming up. Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Bangladesh's former Prime Minister, Sheikh Hasina, was sentenced to death by a tribunal today for ordering a deadly crackdown on student protesters who successfully toppled her government last year. According to a UN report, 1,400 people were killed, thousands injured after security forces opened fire on demonstrators last year. The verdict came as Hasina has been living in exile in India. Bangladesh has been rocked by 30 bomb explosions and dozens of arson attacks over the past few days in the lead up to the verdict. This comes as Bangladesh is expected to hold parliamentary elections in February next year. In Gaza, Israeli forces have killed at least three Palestinians as Israel continues to violate the U.S. brokered ceasefire. Since the start of the truce October 10th, at least 266 Palestinians have been killed, 635 wounded by Israeli attacks. Physicians for Human Rights Israel is reporting at least 98 Palestinians have died in Israeli custody since October 2023. And that the real death toll is likely much higher because hundreds of people detained in Gaza are still missing. Meanwhile, UNICEF estimates more than 600,000 Palestinian children have missed out on school during the U.S., the Israeli assault on Gaza, and only 100,000 have managed to return to classrooms. Humanitarian NGOs say Israel's still restricting the entry of food aid and other critical supplies into the Gaza Strip. This is Zahia Al-Shambari, who waited in line to buy bread in Khan Yunis.
After 2 hours of struggle at the supermarket to get a bag of bread, thank God I finally got one bag of bread for about 8 people. I'm really happy that I'm returning with a bag of bread, and I hope this suffering doesn't happen again. Not today, not tomorrow, not any other day.
This comes as the UN Security Council set to vote today on a U.S. proposal to establish an international stabilization force to enforce the Gaza ceasefire. The U.S. drafted resolution also mentions the possibility of a future Palestinian state. But on Sunday, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu outright rejected any path for Palestinian statehood.
Our opposition to a Palestinian state in any territory west of the Jordan River, this opposition exists, is valid, and has not changed one bit. I have been rebuffing these attempts for decades, and I am doing it both against pressure from outside and against pressure from within. So I do not need affirmations, tweets, or lectures from anyone.
Meanwhile, new details are emerging about a shadowy organization called Al-Majd Europe that's been taking Palestinians in Gaza to South Africa. The organization reportedly has ties to Israel. Last week, a chartered plane carrying 153 Palestinians landed in Johannesburg. South African President Cyril Ramaphosa said, quote, "It does seem likely they were being flushed out of Gaza." President Trump said Sunday he is open to talks with Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro as he considers whether to launch a unilateral attack on Venezuela. In brief remarks to reporters, Trump did not offer details about the possible discussions, but said, quote, "Venezuela would like to talk." Trump's remarks came as Secretary of State Marco Rubio designated the organized criminal group Cartel de los Soles as a foreign terrorist organization. U.S. officials have claimed without evidence Maduro and other government officials lead the cartel. Trump has claimed that allows the Pentagon to target Maduro's assets and infrastructure inside Venezuela. Meanwhile, the Pentagon said it had killed another 3 people in the Eastern Pacific accused of smuggling drugs by sea, though officials offered no evidence. This brings the reported toll to 83 people killed across 21 strikes since early September. This comes amidst the largest buildup of U.S. forces in the Caribbean since the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis, involving nearly a dozen Navy ships and about 15,000 sailors and Marines. In Caracas, President Nicolas Maduro warned the U.S. public against allowing the Trump administration to lead the U.S. into a new forever war in South America.
Queremos otra Gaza ahora en Sudamérica.
Do we want another Gaza now in South America? What does the people of the United States say?
¿Quieren una nueva Afganistán?
Do you want a new Afghanistan? Do you want Vietnam again? Do you want Libya once more? Or worse, do you want a new Gaza in South America?
En Sudamérica, déjeme decirle que no.
Let me tell you, no, no, and no. Here peace will triumph. International law will triumph.
El derecho internacional.
In Brazil, tens of thousands of protesters marched outside the COP30 climate summit in Belém on Saturday to demand urgent action on the climate, including the rapid phase-out of fossil fuels. The Great People's March was the first major protest of its kind in 4 years after authorities in Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Azerbaijan banned large-scale demonstrations at prior UN climate summits. This is indigenous protester Christiane Puyanawa.
We are here today at the Global Climate March. Women, youths, indigenous people, riverine communities, and Kilombolas are united to demand social justice and the demarcation of indigenous lands. Our land and our forests are not commodities. Respect nature and the people who live in the forest. Demarcation now.
We'll have more from Saturday's protests and the action inside the COP30 climate summit here in Belém, Brazil, after headlines. Masked federal immigration officers fanned out across Charlotte, North Carolina over the weekend, sparking protests as the Trump administration shifted its mass deportation campaign to North Carolina's largest city. Democratic Governor Josh Stein said the agents were carrying out racial profiling and stoking fear.
We've seen masked, heavily armed agents in paramilitary garb driving unmarked cars, targeting American citizens based on their skin color, racially profiling and picking up random people in parking lots and off of our sidewalks.
Among those targeted were landscapers decorating Christmas trees and congregants of an East Charlotte church volunteering to tend a garden. In another incident shared widely on social media, masked federal agents pulled over Willywender Aceituna Medina, a Honduras-born U.S. citizen, and forced him from his vehicle.
No. Usted me lo quiebra.
No, if you break it, you will pay for it. If you break it, you will pay for it. If you break my window. Why did you do this, sir? Why are you doing this?
Aceituna told reporters he warned the agents he was a U.S. citizen, but that they didn't believe him. He suffered cuts to his arm and neck. He later filed a police report over the broken glass. President Trump's called on House Republicans to approve a measure compelling the Justice Department to release the Epstein files. Trump's reversal late Sunday came after he unsuccessfully lobbied Republican Congresswomen Lauren Boebert and Nancy Mace to remove their names from a discharge petition seeking the file's release. This follows months of stonewalling by the Trump administration over the file's release, and after Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson adjourned the House early to prevent a vote on the Epstein files. On Friday, Trump demanded the Justice Department investigate a list of powerful Democrats discussed in a trove of newly released emails from Jeffrey Epstein, but omitted his own name. The list includes former President Bill Clinton, former Treasury Secretary and former Harvard President Larry Summers, and Democratic donor Reid Hoffman. Trump wrote on social media, quote, Epstein was a Democrat, and he's the Democrats' problem, not the Republicans' problem, the president said. The Georgia election interference case against President Trump and his allies will now have a new prosecutor after Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis was removed from the case. The executive director of the Prosecuting Attorneys Council of Georgia, Pete Skandalakis, is set to take over the case. Georgia State University law professor Anthony Michael Kreis told the Associated Press, quote, I doubt anything will ever move forward with the president, unquote. But the case could proceed against 14 other Trump allies, including former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani and former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. Trump's pardon, Giuliani, Meadows, and dozens of other Republican officials and activists accused of helping him overturn the results of the 2020 election. But the pardons only apply to federal cases, not the Georgia election interference case, which is a state-level prosecution. In the Philippines, hundreds of thousands of demonstrators took to the streets Sunday to demand accountability over a corruption scandal that exposed how top government officials were receiving kickbacks from construction companies responsible for faulty and incomplete flood defense projects. The three-day protest rally comes after typhoons battered the Philippines early this month, leaving at least 259 people dead.
Almost for isang daang araw na yung proseso. Almost 100 days has passed since the process began, yet no one has been jailed. There already is plenty of proof. A lot of evidence has come out. But our question is, how come no one has been jailed yet?
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, at least 32 people were killed after a bridge at a copper and cobalt mine collapsed due to overcrowding. A government agency report said gunfire from soldiers at the site sparked panic among the miners who rushed to the bridge, causing it to collapse. The DRC is the world's largest producer of cobalt, which is used to make batteries for electric vehicles. A BBC investigation has uncovered new evidence that implicates two U.S. Marines in the killing of Iraqi civilians in Haditha 2 decades ago. The BBC reports statements and testimony given in the aftermath of the Haditha massacre raised doubts about the investigation into what happened November 19, 2005, when U.S. forces slaughtered 24 Iraqis, posing significant questions over how U.S. armed forces are held to account. Just one U.S. soldier was convicted of a crime over the massacre. Marine Staff Sergeant Frank Wooderich was found guilty of negligent dereliction of duty in 2012 and served no jail time. And disability rights advocate and writer Alice Wong has died at the age of 51. When Wong was born with muscular dystrophy in 1974, doctors said she wouldn't live to the age of 18. Despite that prognosis, Wong went on to earn an undergraduate degree at Indiana University and a master's degree from the University of California, San Francisco, before founding the Disability Visibility Project, an online community dedicated to creating, sharing, and amplifying disability media and culture. This is Alice Wong speaking with Democracy Now! In 2021.
I think a lot of people to the public do not know what ableism is, and if they hear about it, they actually deny that it exists. You know, ableism is systemic, and it's really bound up with hypercapitalism and white supremacy.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit, that's COP30, from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. Leaders and delegates from more than 190 countries have entered a second week of negotiations. On Saturday, Democracy Now! Is in the streets of Belém as tens of thousands of protesters gather demanding urgent climate action. The Great People's March was the first major climate protest at a UN climate summit since 2021. The three previous climate summits were hosted by nations that banned public actions: Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, and Azerbaijan.
In the streets of Belém, where the UN Climate Summit is taking place, we're halfway through the negotiations of COP30. It's a Saturday. Thousands of people have taken to the streets demanding urgent climate action. We spoke to several of them.
My name is Giovanni Del Prete. I'm from Brazil, from São Paulo. I'm here with all the people from more. We have here gathered more than 60 countries here, and we have gathered in UFPA in university, the Rio COP summit here, the people's summit in the university here of the state of Pará. We have gathered there 30,000 people that from 60 countries. Here we are denouncing all the false solutions in the COP30. We are saying that the financial market was in the official COP30, and the real people and the real solutions were here. We are here, seen here on the streets. So this is our message to the world. Against the war, against the imperialist invasion, we are seeing U.S. right now just launching a new military attempt against Venezuela, against Colombia, and this is what matters. There is no peace, there is no possibility of environmental solutions with war, with fossil fuels, and this is what we are here. Denouncing, more than denouncing the problems, but also presenting proposals for life in the peoples, the peasants, the women movement. We have the diversity of all societies here. So this is what we are doing here. Fight for our life.
Sou mulher amazônica.
I am an Amazonian woman. I am an activist in the peasant women's movement. And we are here at the Global March in defense of life, in defense of our territories, and we will not negotiate our rights. Because there is no living territory if we are not alive. We will not negotiate our rights.
Okay, I am Lucia Ichu, a Maya Quiche woman from Guatemala. I'm part of the Amazon Flotilla and also Festivales Media in Guatemala. I'm staying the march, supporting indigenous grassroots organizations in Brazil, but also defending and denouncing the ecocide in Guatemala and in the different parts of the continent. I'm also part of the Yakumama Flotilla. We travel for more than 31 days for the Amazon River from Ecuador to Belém, and we see the ecocide there. So for us, it's very important to be here and stand together because we have to take action together for the environmental issue.
Why is that sense of solidarity so important, especially among indigenous leaders from across the region and around the world?
Well, one of the most important things for me for this COP is the action and the solidarity that we are building together as an indigenous leaders and land defenders for different parts of the world. Because we know that the answer is us. We know that we are the lead alternatives. We have the answers and we have the response for all the devastation and the destruction for the climate crisis. And we are making this together. We know that we have the solutions.
My name is Delma Wellington Jovo from Zimbabwe, a smallholder farmer, a peasant farmer from my country. I'm part of the international movement of La Via Campesina. We are here because as La Via Campesina, we are concerned of the false solutions that you are being given. We are concerned about the power that is still playing in the COP. We feel the power is not equal. People are, the corporate capture of the system has gone high. And so we have come to lend our voice to say this is high time it should stop. People should look at the people first, not at money, not at anything, but just look at people and the farmers. We are the majority, even in any country. Therefore, we should be considered. That's why we are here.
My name is Erinaldo Rodrigues, da aldeia de Mirijituba, Baixo Tapajós.
My name is Erinaldo Rodrigues. I am the chief of the Mirijituba village, and the message I want to tell the government is on this banner. It's for them to leave us, the Tapajós, in peace. They take away our food, the food of our children and grandchildren, and that is our territory. That is a sacred place where we must fight until the end of our lives, until we die. For that river, for the stones, for the rock formations, all of that serves as a symbol of our ancestors. That place is a legend to us. And I want to tell the government to look out for us because stop harming us in our region, in our Amazon rainforest.
Our families are dying, our territories are dying, our orders are dying. In our country, we and the nature are the same thing. We are not separate. So our life, our spirituality, our mind, our feelings is totally connected to the rivers. We are the waters, people of the waters, fishmen and fishwomen. Our life is the river. Our life is the ocean. And the ocean and the ocean's animals have no voice. We are the voice of the waters, of the water animals, and they are dying and crying, and no, that needs to stop and right now.
It's just really important to point out that there's a lot of focus in Amazon, in the forest, but there's also need to focus on the riverine communities, on the quilombola communities, and also in the communities from other areas that are also guardians of our ecosystem, and our systems are very important, like the fisher folk and the coast and the fisher folk and the mangroves. So this is the movement that represents them.
Tom Gold Tooth in it. from Minnesota, United States, Indigenous Environmental Network. We are a global international network of indigenous people. We're standing here with our relatives from the global south, from the Amazon, to speak with one mind and one voice and one heart. We're demanding that all these fossil fuel lobbyists be removed. It's very unethical and immoral that there's more there than the indigenous people here from the local region. We had indigenous people here who had to fight to get in. But we have these corporations that can just walk right in with no struggle. So we're declaring that the rights of indigenous people be recognized and that there be climate action, real solutions. And we have that as indigenous people.
Denunciar toda la negociación capitalista sobre...
We are here to denounce the capitalist negotiations in the face of the climate crisis, which never manages to fulfill any agreements for controlling greenhouse gas emissions or establishing carbon sinks. Instead, it's pure capitalist business interests with no results. We must insist on mitigation and compensation, as well as adaptation. Climate justice is also necessary, and that implies compensation for the damage caused by the climate crisis inflicted by capitalism and global imperialism. And of course, solidarity with the people of Venezuela who are being threatened with the use of force by a thug in a red tie and blue suit, but who only wants not freedom, not democracy, not humanitarian aid.
Con corbata roja y traje azul, pero que lo único que quiere no es libertad.
But to plunder their resources, not only of Venezuela, they want to enter the Amazon through Venezuela, and they're coming to seize all of Latin America.
Por Venezuela, pero vienen contra toda Latinoamérica.
Fight for climate justice!
Resist imperialism!
Fight for climate justice!
Resist imperialism!
I'm Rachel Junsai. I'm from the Philippines, and I'm with the People's Rising for Climate Justice. We're marching with the people of Belém today to demand accountability from the world leaders as they attend COP30. As we can see, a lot of wars and occupations has been happening all over the world, from Palestine to Sudan to Congo and other regions, West Papua and even in Asia. And with that, the ongoing ecocide is something that we should not tolerate, something that we should not allow. And so we're here demanding for these world leaders, for these imperialist nations to stop the U.S.-led wars, to stop their imperialist dominations over these countries, to stop the food blockades, and to stop violating the human rights of those people and the environment. Communities in the Philippines are devastated by flooding and corruption, and those are things that should have been talked about in the COP30, and yet we are seeing false solutions. We are seeing carbon markets that do not do justice to the people. Instead of putting the spotlight on the communities affected by the typhoons, it is the world leaders, it is the global North imperialist nation that are taking up space. That's why the movement is here, to get their space, to demand accountability, and to fight back against these world leaders who are dominating the space that should have been for the people and for the environment.
Why are we on this streets today? Can we answer that question, please? We are tired of false solutions. We are tired of corporate capture of the system. We are tired of being slaves in our own countries. I believe the power is in us to say no. As we stand together, let the COP know that we are concerned as peasants. Power to the people.
From the streets of Belém, this is Maria Ines Taracena with Democracy Now.
Voices from the streets of Belém here in Brazil. At Saturday's major indigenous-led climate protest outside the UN Climate Summit, where we are right now. Special thanks to Maria Teresena, Sam Alcoff, and Trina Nadurda. When we come back, we'll speak to the heads of Amazon Watch and Oxfam Brazil. Stay with us.
Maitá, oh, 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 Ma
Protesters chanting during Saturday's march on COP 30 here in Belém. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. COP 30 comes 33 years after the Rio Earth Summit, which established the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC. Leaders and delegates from more than 190 countries have entered a second week of negotiations at the summit known as COP 30. That's Conference of Parties 30. We're joined now by two guests. Leila Salazar-Lopez is the executive director of Amazon Watch. She recently wrote an article headlined COP 30 at the Crossroads, Indigenous Sovereignty or Climate Collapse. And we're joined by Viviana Santiago, the executive director of Oxfam Brazil. Earlier this year, she joined the Lula administration as a member of the presidency council focused on sustainable development. Oxfam recently released a report titled Climate Plunder, How a Powerful Few Are Locking the World into Disaster, unquote. Oxfam also submitted a petition of over a million signatures to the Brazilian government demanding that the super rich pay for climate damages. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! It's quite something to be here at the gateway of the Amazon. Viviana, let's begin with you. For our global audience, can you set the stage? Where exactly are we? What is the significance of Belém? Why is the UN Climate Summit? Why did Lula, the president of Brazil, choose to put it in this gateway city?
Thank you so much for the invitation. It's really important to us to be here with you. And talk about the importance of being here in the Amazon region is talk about the vulnerability that you can see in this region. You can see how poverty affects people here, but also you can see how these people can answer the climate crisis. I think that the whole idea is about what we can have from this environment in terms of resistance, in terms of power connections with earth and nature, and how ancestrality plays an important role ensuring that we need to connect with our roots. But at the same time, we can see that these people that are fighting for survival, fighting for conservancy, are the most affected people in the world. And it's about climate crisis. And in some way, it's about to talk about climate justice. We need to understand that people that are most affected for the climate crisis are the people that did nothing to this crisis. So how can we act in terms to protect their lives and ensure that the rich polluters will pay for that?
So here we are at the mouth of the Amazon, right, in Belém. The Amazon, the lungs of the planet. Can you talk about the impacts of rising temperatures and deforestation?
Here in Brazil, and especially in this region, we can see this impact. We can see how the heat is affecting people's health, how it's almost impossible for some children go to school because schools are not prepared for this heat, even here in this region. But at certain point, in some months here, the entire country can suffer the consequences. So what we are facing right now is a climate crisis here in Brazil that is affecting the entire country. What happens in Amazon affecting Brazil as a whole? So what we need to do right now is ensure that we will have conditions to adaptations and to mitigate the risk.
Leila Salazar Lopez, put Brazil in a regional context. The significance of this country when it comes to climate change. I mean, we just had Viviana saying the people who least cause climate change are most affected by it. And also respond to President Trump, a well-known and proud climate change denier. He campaigned on the slogan, drill, baby, drill. Not sending a high-level delegation to this climate summit. It's the first time in the COP's history.
Well, thank you, Amy, for having me in Democracy Now! Really, this is about democracy, right? You opened the segment with saying that we haven't had civil society at COPs in 3 years. And so that's what we're seeing here in Brazil. We're seeing
that because we're talking about more repressive governments that didn't allow public protest.
For the last 3 years, the COPs have been in Egypt, Dubai, and Azerbaijan. The civil society presence has been very, very limited. It's been inside. And the beauty of the Forest COP, the beauty of the People's COP in Brazil is that civil society is very active, both inside and outside. And as Viviana was saying, there, you know, it's critical that what is happening here in the Amazon is at a tipping point. It's not coming, it's here. Why is that? I think we should talk about why the Amazon is at a tipping point, why the Amazon is literally burning. It's because of policy, it's because of industry, it's because of extraction, it's because of continued land grabbing, oil extraction, mineral extraction, land grabbing of indigenous people's lands. And that's why we see the mobilizations of indigenous and local communities saying we want our land back, we want land demarcation, we want our rights just respected, we want mining off of our lands, we want the Amazon free of extraction. Literally, there is a protest happening right now by a mobilization of indigenous peoples leaving the indigenous village that has over 3,500 indigenous people staying there. And that's why we're saying that this is the indigenous COP. There are more indigenous peoples here in Belém than at any other COP in history. And that is significant because indigenous peoples are the guardians of the forest. They are protecting the forest. Riverine people, campesino people, quilombolas, they are protecting the forests from the threats, from the destruction. And they've made a very significant presence here at COP. And yes, there's the absence of the U.S. government as climate deniers, but the U.S. civil society is here too. We're here very strongly, and whether our federal government denies climate, we're here to also stand with the people and also demand that the Amazon be free of extraction and that we have, you know, there is no mention of fossil fuel extraction and the fact that it is the number one cause of global greenhouse gas emissions. So there's something missing there. When we have over 1,200 fossil fuel lobbyists here, that's more than some entire country delegations. So we need to come to reality here with the fact that we need to keep oil in the ground. We've been saying this for a long time since the Paris Agreement. We're a lot closer to hearing that here at COP30. And it is the indigenous people in the local communities who are making that known, that we want the Amazon free of extraction.
And Viviana Santiago, it is those people, grassroots environmental activists, particularly indigenous, who also face the most threat, not just environmentally, but how many have been murdered in the last years? Can you talk about that violence and who's perpetrating it?
Here in Brazil, we are completely aware that Brazil is one of the most dangerous countries in the world for civil society activists, especially environmental activists. And the murder of civil society activists is completely related with land, with extractivism, with the protection of the forest. People who are right now here in Brazil talking about it
are in danger. And there is not enough conversations about it, not from the entire society, because we understand that the interests that are behind of this reality are completely aligned with fossil fuel, with the new economy, with this model of sustainability. And here in Brazil, we will not face any improvement in this context if we are not open to discuss it with the private sectors who are really behind of these realities, because in the ground, people are being murdered because they are trying to protect their lands, their lifestyle, their rivers.
Now, you're really wearing two hats, though I'm the one wearing the hat in this show. Your two hats, you're head of Oxfam Brazil, and you just joined the Lula administration as in his presidency advisory council. Just ahead of COP, Lula's government approved new oil exploration near the mouth of the Amazon River, while Lula has backed a 900-kilometer highway redevelopment that environmental and indigenous groups say would provide access for extractive industries and threaten huge new areas of forest. Can you comment on this as a person who's so often been on the outside, but you're on the inside now as well?
Yeah, it was really devastating for all of us, these decisions. We, as civil society, we fight a lot against it. But I understand that in this government, they think that there is a way to finance transition from fossil fuels. Personally, I don't agree. I completely disagree that it can be a path for us, because this path previously led us on this reality that we are facing right now. It's generating a lot of resistance in the entire country and generating solidarity in the entire world. I think that it's still time to change this reality. It really affects and really increases the threat against indigenous people and traditional communities in Amazonas. There is no way that these activities can't generate more impact, more danger, and I think that it is still time to change these decisions. The movement right now in Brazil from civil society is really trying to change this decision, because it's impossible to keep Brazil on track with this situation right now.
Leila Salazar Lopez, can you talk about the role of indigenous people being excluded from the talks? And you've been here for the last week. If you can talk about the state of the talks right now here in Belém, we're inside COP30, inside the UN Climate Summit, where these negotiations are taking place. And for people who don't understand what happens every year, the significance of this being called an action summit.
The significance of it being called an action summit is because we need action for the Amazon. We need action for the global climate and for the communities. We hear a lot of talk about direct finance. There's a lot of talk about finance, but for indigenous peoples who we work in solidarity with, it's about direct finance to indigenous peoples, not only to governments, not only through corporations and intermediaries, but directly to indigenous people so that they have the sovereignty to make their decisions on what they want to do with their land. And that's why we see, you know, when there are people excluded, we see here in Brazil, people aren't used to saying no. And the Munduruku people who traveled from their communities, from their territories, which are threatened by illegal mining, which are threatened by an industrial waterway to transport soy, which are threatened by a Ferrogrão, the soy railway, to transport soy to Europe and China. When we see them coming in buses, in ferries, in boats, in giant caravans, they're not coming to stand outside. They're coming to put some pressure and some heat on the governments, the negotiators, and that's what they came to do. When we saw the COP being shut down on Friday, it was the Munduruku people saying, no one in, no one out.
Why? Because they said, we want our land demarcated. We do not want this federal grau, this soy railway. We do not want this waterway. And the COP president came out, and Marina Silva came out, and Minister Sonia Guajajara came out and met with them. And that, you know, that wasn't the plan, but that's democracy. And that was what is so beautiful here in Brazil. And as a result, you know, the Brazilian government said, you know, we're going to put a hold on this federal grau. We're not going forward on this soy railway for Cargill and ADM and Bunge and all these multinational corporations to feed animals, not people. We're not going forward with this without people's consent. And that's democracy, and that's the power of the indigenous movement here in Brazil.
In fact, there is an indigenous march going on right now, right outside of COP. But the level of negotiations and the countries that are playing a key role, if you can explain sort of an insider's look as well.
Well, honestly, I have not been on so much on the inside. I've been more on the outside. But I do know that from the Indigenous Caucus, one of the victories is that there is mention of mining. There is, and that has never happened at a COP. There is a mention of mining as a cause of climate change, and that there needs to be free, prior, and informed consent. And there's also a mention of discussions and a mention of Indigenous peoples in voluntary isolation. That means uncontacted peoples. There's still uncontacted peoples here in the Amazon, and that is one of the major demands of the indigenous movement, that the lands of indigenous people in voluntary isolation in particular need to be free from any kind of extraction.
I want people to understand, and let me put this question to Viviana Santiago. Here you are in Brazil, head of Oxfam Brazil. What isolated communities are? People who voluntarily choose, communities that voluntarily choose to be isolated, and what that means. It's a really formal government designation and how the government protects them.
I think that isolated indigenous communities are the most beautiful thing in the entire world, because we can see how these people has decided to live according their beliefs, according their traditions. They really believe that they don't need this contact. They don't want this contact. And the way that they are framing their cosmovision is based on their own history and completely connected with ancestrality. Here in Brazil, they are protected by law. They are protected, and we can ensure also this protection because they are more vulnerable to disease than the other people and communities. So avoid and really prevent people from outside to be there is a duty of the government here in Brazil. But their lands are super valued here in Brazil, and that's why to address mining during COP, it's important, because right now, because of the transitions, we are facing all the time the importance of the minerals, but there's not good mining. So when we are talking about the importance of these minerals, we are talking about mining, and we are again putting these lands in the center of this process and making them more vulnerable than before. And I think that right now, Brazilian government must ensure total protections, and it can be done by protect their lands. If you protect the land, you protect the people.
There are more indigenous people here at this COP30 than there have been at any UN climate summit. I'm wondering, before we wrap up, if you can talk about President Lula's proposal of tropical forests forever. If you can explain, and maybe Leila, you can too, talk about Lula's proposal to pay countries not to deforest.
I'll start. I can say that in our perspective as Oxfam, we understand that it's really innovative. This mechanism, it's really an innovation from COP presidents, from Brazilian presidents. But we also understand that there would be faster ways to achieve the same result. We believe that a global taxation on wealth and sectors that are polluting the world right now would be more effective and fast. The amount of money that is available for communities, it starts on 20%, but we understand that it would be a start, but indigenous peoples are asked for at least half of the fund. So there is a simple way, and we can do it, taxing the rich polluters, taxing the sectors that are polluting more, and the money, it can be led to the local communities.
Layla, we spoke to a Jamaican, a British climate activist when the hurricane hit Jamaica. And she said, rather than naming hurricanes, you know, Hurricane Melissa, Hurricane John, why don't you name them after oil companies? And I'm just wondering, Layla, as we wrap up, the significance of Trump not sending a high-level delegation to this summit, the first time an American government has not. I mean, there are a number of senators and Congress members who do believe in climate change who are here representing the government but not representing Trump. Do you see this actually as an opportunity that the administration will not be shaping what goes on, or are they doing it in other ways, through the fossil fuel lobbyists, for example?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, while the federal government is not here, civil society is here, and subnational states were here. I mean, the California governor was here, various representatives of the state of California were here, and we're very happy to have been collaborating with Senator Josh Becker, who led an initiative in the state of California to investigate California's reliance on Amazon crude, because over half of the Amazon crude that comes out of Ecuador, which has had an amazing election yesterday for the rights of nature and for democracy, over half of the oil that comes out of Ecuador comes to California. So we're looking into, as a part of the just transition in California, phasing out Amazon crude. But we also need to phase out crude in Kern County and offshore in California. And so we need to see, we're seeing climate leadership from state levels, not the federal government, but I'm sure, you know, with Trump's and other countries' desire to get every last drop of oil, I'm sure they're supporting the fossil fuel industry lobbyists that are here present at COP.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation all week, because we're here broadcasting from COP30, the UN Climate Summit, the gateway city of Belém and the gateway to the Amazon. Leila Salazar-Lopez, thanks so much for joining us, Executive Director of Amazon Watch. And Viviana Santiago, Executive Director of Oxfam Brazil, now in the Lula government, part of the Advisory Presidential Council. Coming up, Asad Raymond, Chief Executive of Friends of the Earth. Stay with us. indigenous protesters chanting during Saturday's march on COP30 here in Belém, Brazil. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from the UN Climate Summit from the Brazilian city of Belém. It's the gateway to the Amazon. To look at the state of the negotiations and more, we're joined by Asad Raymond, the chief executive of Friends of the Earth, longtime climate justice campaigner, previously executive director at War on Want. We welcome you back to Democracy Now! Thanks so much for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Amy.
So you've been here through the summit. Explain what we should understand. What are the negotiations that are being taking place? What is the theme of this COP30?
So just to take a step back in first, obviously we're meeting here when the very rules-based system, whether it's from Gaza to climate, is under threat. Well, obviously we've seen the rise of far-right, authoritarianism and fascism, Donald Trump and climate denialism have been one. And this weaponizing of anti-Muslim, anti-migrant and anti-climate being part of the backdrop, and that's been one of the sort of drivers here about how do you celebrate 10 years of Paris, 30 years of COP, to show that actually multilateralism matters and implementation matters. Look, we've heard from the ICJ that there is a legal and a moral obligation for countries to act both on mitigation and adaptation. They have a responsibility not only for the polluter pays and doing their fair share, but also to do no harm.
And of course the ICJ is the International Court of Justice at The Hague.
So absolutely. So I would say there are three issues that are crossing every negotiating room here. One is fairness. How do the people, whether they're in Kingston, Manila or Gaza, celebrate if impacts are happening to them from extreme weather impacts to floods? What happens in terms of equity? Who's doing their bit? Who's missing? And of course, the United States not doing their fair share, but also rich developed countries not delivering the scale of ambition that is required. And then the critical question of finance. We all know finance is needed. And what we saw in Baku last year was, you know, a lot of promises on private finance, on mobilizing. But really what is required is who's actually going to provide the support. And so the cost of inaction we know is running in trillions. Will there be money here? And some of those negotiations, of course, are not happening here in Belém. They're happening in Nairobi at this very same moment when there is a debate and discussions going on about a UN tax convention. And the very countries that are refusing to pay for climate finance here are also blocking action that would provide the hundreds of billions that are needed. Look, Brazil's government came here and said they've got what they call the Fab Four, provision of finance, making sure that unilateral measures such as trade measures are equal. Can they close the ambition gap? And can there be transparency? Not only in reporting what countries are doing, but also on the key question of finance. We've heard for a long time lots of words from developed countries saying we're providing lots of money, but when we lift the hood, we know that it's a lot of double counting. A lot of that finance isn't very real, so we need transparency on finance. The negotiations are still continuing, and now ministers will start to meet, ministers from both the developed countries and developed countries, to close the gap on what is called the seven key issues. Those will be the global stocktake. How close are we to meeting the ambition needed on 1.5? The critical issue of global goal on adaptation. How do we adapt to the fact that the world is changing? Extreme weather, inequality, ecosystems collapsing. What we're going to do about the just transition? How do we ensure we have a plan about the transition that works for people, communities, countries and workers? And then, of course, making sure whether it's in mitigation, technology and finance, including on gender, that there is progress. So those things are going to happen. The hope is there actually is some really concrete roadmaps here. We've heard a lot about global goal on adaptation, a critical issue for developing countries. We had 5,000 indicators. They got down to 1,000 indicators. We're now down to 100 indicators. But indicators without the finance, without the means to implement, will just be meaningless. So what developing countries are saying here is we need a roadmap on adaptation. On the Just Transition Work Programme, there's a demand. It's been echoed by civil society and by the developing countries, the G77, saying we need a BLM action mechanism. This sounds like a technical term, but really what it means is that there will be not just coordination, but actually a concrete plan that allows people to plan about how we manage this change and ensure everybody has a right to live with dignity and harmony with our planet. Now, the third thing is on fossil fuels. Now, fossil fuels themselves aren't in these negotiations as such, but there are countries coming here, like Colombia, that's saying we've got a roadmap. We can ensure that we can move away from fossil fuels, but that, of course, requires us to have finance. It requires us to understand the diversification for lots of countries who are relying on fossil fuels, and of course, recognizing that for many countries, including developing countries, they're trapped in a cycle of debt, which means that they keep having to exploit their fossil fuels. So if we want to end that, we need a plan on that as well.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there for today, but we are here all week. We're talking about the climate catastrophe and what people are doing about it. I want to thank Asad Rehman, now chief executive of Friends of the Earth. That does it for our show as we broadcast from the UN COP30 Climate Summit in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. I'm Amy Goodman.
Thank you.